Welcome, welcome to a special edition of the French Connection on this Tuesday, the 30th day of June 2009. Of course, my name is Daryl Bradford Smith. Great to be here with you again for this most important of broadcasts. So much is going on in the world. So many people are attempting with all of their energies to fix the problems we face. Now, one of the people that has been consistently trying to talk about the problems we face today for a generation, in fact, for a whole generation, this man spoke out about these problems and was largely ignored by the mainstream media, but many people in the country and around the world have paid great attention to this gentleman. A real patriot, an honest man, and somebody willing to speak out regardless of the cost. His name is Representative Paul Findley, and he is my guest today on the French Connection. Representative Findley, are you with me?
Yes, I am, and glad to be.
Well, so am I, sir. You know, one of the things that I've been doing over time here, including my work with Cynthia McKinney and so many others, I've had Ralph Nader on, and I've had people who've left the CIA angry and disgruntled over how Israel and its partners have completely usurped the power of the American government structure. And you experienced that firsthand. But I want to go back to the beginnings. You started your congressional career back in 1961 in Illinois. Could you tell us a little bit about your first impressions of Congress when you got back in the 60s? You were there during the Kennedy period.
I was exhilarated from the first moment, and that exhilaration never left me at one time. At any time, it found myself amazed at my good fortune and being elected to the legislature for the United States of America. I had numerous opportunities far beyond any that I could have dreamed of achieving. So I'm enjoying life at the age of 88 now, writing a book about my life, what I learned, what I tried to accomplish, and what needs to be done by those who follow on. So I welcome the chance to be a part of French Connection, especially because my first entry into foreign policy, the area to which I gave my full attention all through the years, was the disarray of NATO and the behavior of Charles de Gaulle, President of France, early in the years that I was in the House.
Okay. And what were those actions that he took, Mr. de Gaulle?
Well, he decided in the wake of the showdown that Jack Kennedy had with Khrushchev over the missiles in Cuba that he wanted to get the unified command of NATO off French soil, and it was relocated in Belgium, as all of us know. But de Gaulle took that position because while he remained as a member of the NATO alliance, he never did like the idea of integrating French military forces into a single system of NATO. And because of those two reasons, he took this action, which I did not approve, but I think it was understandable from his long experience being used as a whipping boy by other nations.
Yep.
During the terrible agony of World War II and beyond.
Well, you know, Representative Findley, what I've discovered since then is that all through the Cold War, the American government, unbeknownst to most of its representatives and its public, was sharing technology and other things with Russia, and this is why you notice that there were a lot of duplicate examples of technology showing up in Russia, and they were being ferried back and forth by people like Armand Hammer and others, but we also had a lot of spying going on at the hands of the Rosenbergs and others, giving away our most cherished secrets to the Soviets. And it's interesting because when we look back at the founding of the Soviet style communism, it was largely by the same group that was doing the spying at the time. And it's interesting now in hindsight to look back at how they pulled off a lot of these actions.
Well, de Gaulle resented the fact that even though France was included with England and the U.S. as the top committee of the alliance, France was screened out from dealings in the nuclear field, even though Britain had a guy named Klaus Fuchs who stole secrets of nuclear information for the Soviet Union, while the U.S. and Britain looked down on France as being overrun with communists and couldn't be trusted. He also resented the fact that the Iberland command along the coast of France was supposed to have been headed in the integrated structure by a French admiral, but it was never activated. These are a couple of the little things, or not so little things, that caused France to get NATO headquarters out of France.
Well, when was your first experience with the pressure of the Israeli slash, and I'll use the term Zionist, because not all Jews are Zionists. Zionism, in my research, is a political movement and should be separated from many Jewish people, because not all Jewish people are involved in world Zionism. But when was your first experience of having to witness their power being used in politics?
Well, it came in 1967, just a few months after I became a member of the Foreign Affairs Committee of the House. The assault on the USS Liberty occurred, or was announced, when I was on the House floor, and immediately members of the House who were closely committed to the State of Israel were on their feet defending it as a case of mistaken identity. Well, on a trip overseas shortly after that, I read a copy of Jim Ennis's book, Assault on the Liberty.
Yep.
He was the deck officer of the Liberty when the assault, the planned assault by the State of Israel trying to destroy the Liberty and its entire crew occurred.
Yeah.
And it made me realize that that Israel was hardly a dependable ally of the U.S. government.
That's right.
That even though there were many people who wanted us to toe the line laid out by the State of Israel and its lobby in the U.S., there were also people who were willing to send to their death members of the USS Navy, namely on, aboard the USS Liberty. And any nation that's willing to treat its ally that way has to be kept under suspicion.
Well, I agree with that. Now, let's talk a little bit about some of the other very clear examples of their control. You take a look at Hollywood, you take a look at the area of finance, you take a look at the area of education, of medicine, of medical research, especially in the area of vaccines. And what you find is that the same group that you discovered was working within politics is also working within these other very important areas of the country, and it turns out that it adds up to a very, not just suspicious, but it turns out to be a conspiracy against the independence of the American government and its public, in my view.
Let me put it this way. There is no question whatever as to whether the State of Israel has dominated our entire society.
Yes.
This is true from coast to coast and border to border. It is also true throughout our political system. The operations of the Congress, the Defense Department, the State Department, Department of Defense, all of the areas of government which touch in any way Middle East policy are simply dominated by those who serve the State of Israel. I don't ever use the word conspiracy. I don't know whether it deserves that, but the facts are plain. Our entire nation is under the thumb of those whose interests in the State of Israel surmount their interests in the United States, and that's why we aren't able to get a fair report over the major news media outlets. We don't get fair treatment even in the higher education system we have, where the tenure policy supposedly keeps the faculty free to make discussions of any topic. And in respect to higher education, there are two exceptional men. One is Stephen Walt of Harvard.
Yep.
The other is John Mearsheimer of the University of Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
Now, both, fortunately, are protected by tenure.
Yep.
They can't be fired for what they say or write. And they have written a splendid book, the Israeli Lobby and U.S. Foreign Policy, which came 20 years after my book, They Dare to Speak Out, People and Institutions Confront Israel's Lobby. They are heroes to me.
Yeah.
They have given a new academic respectability to the very same themes that I outlined in my book.
Yeah.
In fact, they give me credit for being there first. I don't need the credit, but I tell you, our country needs the leadership of people like Walton Mearsheimer, and I'm highly impressed with their diligence in speaking forthrightly and writing in the same way about the topics once their book has been published and has come under pretty hostile fire in a lot of quarters.
Well, you know, Representative, I saw some early research coming from a lot of sources. In fact, there have been some very strong research positions taken by people such as Ezra Pound and individuals like Nesta Webster and Elizabeth Dillings and so many others, and including the man named Benjamin Friedman, who spent a great deal of his personal fortune trying to talk about how America was under a serious threat of these people, and he was present with Baruch and with Morgenthau after the First World War's Versailles signings, and he was witnessed to the underhanded dealings that the Zionist lobby was doing after the First World War, and he spoke out about it in the 1960s. Are you familiar with Benjamin Friedman's work?
I know of his name, and I just have general impressions, but let me mention that the assault on our country on 9/11
yes.
would not have occurred if our government had refused to finance Israel's subjugation and destruction of Palestinians' society.
Yeah.
And any president of the United States since 1967 could have prevented us being involved in 9/11, going to war in Iraq and Afghanistan, and suffering the agony of payback, as I call it, from the people of Muslim faith and Arab ancestry, who are so distressed and outraged at our total bias in Middle East policy that favors Israel against the legitimate interests of the Arab community?
Well, you know, Representative Finley, there is a large body of evidence that says the Islam did not commit that 9/11 attack, but in fact, it was a Mossad operation. And we have people all around the 9/11 event that are Israelis, including people from Shin Bet, including people from the Mossad, and the people who profited from it, the trading that went on electronically to profit from it through the airline short selling, and the rest of it was all through Israel. The Odigo messaging service that got that kept the Jewish members of the buildings out of their workplaces that morning. The people who bought the building years in advance, months in advance, the Silverstein and Lowy were purchased the building through the Port Authority, who was also run by a Zionist. So the fact is we can see that the Zionists are all over the 9/11 event, including being caught with bomb material in a van on the George Washington Bridge, dancing Israelis over in New Jersey. We've got so much evidence that they were, in fact, the people who did it. And interesting, the supposed hijackers themselves were not on any flight manifest. So these people that were supposedly responsible didn't even fly on these planes because they weren't originally on their flight list. So it's very strange, you know, when you look at these things in hindsight, that they've made a great number of mistakes in attempting to do this. But, of course, you know, the PNAC agenda, which you are probably aware of, Project for a New American Century, said that they would need to have a Pearl Harbor type event in order to launch any wars in the Middle East, because the American public would refuse participation unless they did. And then lo and behold, we have a building come down, and they use that as a profit center as well, tripling their insurance policies and the whole rest of it. I'm wondering where we are today. Seems like we're in a full takeover of this group on the American public, and I think the Western world in general. What's your belief about all that?
Well, I hope that history of that period will quickly be thoroughly sorted out and made public.
Yep.
But meanwhile, there is enough established history without any contention that points in that same direction.
Yep.
Back in 1982, I was still in Congress, and the state of Israel used fighter aircraft and cannons and ammunition in order to just massacre an immense amount of the population of Beirut,
yeah,
where Palestinians were prominent.
Yes, and that was Ariel Sharon, if I remember.
In that assault,
yeah,
more than 18,000 innocent people were killed. They were killed by Israeli forces using donated equipment from the American people.
Yes.
Through the Treasury. Now, immediately after the slaughter was over, which had almost no attention in the media in the United States, immediately the Congress approved a grant of, I think it was, $150 million to replenish the munition stocks that were used up by the Israelis during this assault. Now, that assault caused the death of six times as many human beings as the 9/11 assault in America. Now, both were tragedies, inexcusable, no way to defend them. But the simple fact of human nature is that there is often an impulse for payback. And I'm sure that the Arab leaders, not necessarily at the government level, but Arab interests, were so infuriated by U.S. complicity in the Israeli assault on Beirut in 1982, that they planned a payback, which came in an ineffective assault a few years earlier, but came full boom in 9/11.
I don't think that's not what the evidence is showing, Representative. We're seeing Israelis that were involved in 9/11. There isn't a single Arab that I can point to, including...
No, I'm not putting the blame on any particular person, but it is a fact that Osama bin Laden has frequently referred to the U.S. complicity.
Well, Osama bin Laden was an asset of the CIA for a minute.
Let me finish my sentence.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Is that all right?
Yes, please.
Okay. Osama bin Laden on several occasions spoke very plainly about his motivation for his anti-American activities. And he cited the as one of the motivations the terrible slaughter of Arabs in 1982. Now, that is a fact of history, and whether the other facts you've mentioned can be sorted out and proved and accepted as historical remains to be seen. I simply do not know. But I do recognize the Israeli capacity for avarice. That is well established by the deliberate slaughter of the men aboard the USS Liberty.
I agree with that. And one of the things that I'd like to maybe move on to here is the lobby's influence during your tenure. Were you approached at any time in any sense to make a commitment to voting in favor of Israeli policy? Because I know some congresspeople have mentioned that they were approached to make a pledge that Israel would be a priority of some sort in their voting record. And was that ever done in regards to your efforts in the Congress?
Well, I know that some of the professional staff on the Hill urged me always to pledge my support for the security of Israel within defensible borders. Those are words that were used so often that they became almost an automatic prefix to comments that many members made. I never took the bait that was offered to me numerous times. Now, I must say that I became a good friend of one of the staff members of AIPAC. His name was Ralph Nuremberger, a fine gentleman, and to my knowledge, never deviating in his honest dealings with me. But we disagreed on the role that Israel should have in American society.
Well,
anyway, it's been a pleasure being with you on this program, and I hope that the temperature in France moderates. It's beautiful right now in Jacksonville, Illinois. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Ladies and gentlemen, Representative Paul Findlay, and it's been great to have him on the French Connection today. We'll let him hang up there, and I will continue as we... Well, ladies and gentlemen, you know, one of the problems that we face when we're doing these kinds of broadcasts is we have to accept the people on face value when they arrive at the programming, and I must say, Mr. Findlay's lack of understanding of what's been happening of late may not be that surprising in light of his advancing years, and certainly I did not want to pressure him into understanding new facts all at once. But clearly, he felt maybe that I was kind of forcing him down a path he didn't want to go to, and that might have been as a result of him not having any knowledge of those areas. You know, to still think that bin Laden had anything to do with 9/11 is a little painful for me to believe about Representative Findlay. But understandable, I guess, at 88, you know. And I wanted to get to a lot more subjects. I had a good 40 more minutes with him in mind when I contacted him for the interview. But as it is with many people, you know, they are unable or unwilling, for whatever reason, to participate. And I think probably his lack of participation in the final part of this
programming was a result of him not having full knowledge of what has been learned over the last 5 or 6 years. And sadly, he's not alone. He is with the majority right now. Most people in America still believe Islam is behind 9/11, which is a sad fact. Although we are chipping away at that belief through evidence and research and facts, I have to say without hesitation here that it went it didn't go as well as I had hoped. On some other areas, on some other fronts here. The other day when we had the three of us on the radio broadcast, we were talking about the moon landing hoax and other items. First of all, I simply, and on this on a personal level, don't believe the Americans ever went to the moon for scientific reasons. You know, the Van Allen belt science is definitive in its clarity about human beings' inability to survive in the environment of space beyond a certain limit around our world, and that had we been able to get to the moon and spend any time there, we would have come back with terrible cancers and probably died much sooner than that. But more than that, the whole claim system where they were using Hasselblad cameras, knowing full well that the radiation would have exposed the film, that the type of top site Hasselblads that were used by their own declaration would have needed to be viewfound from above, and that the spacesuits wouldn't have permitted it. The fact that their spacesuits didn't fit through the module that was supposedly sent to the moon when they were wearing their breathing apparatus on their backs, meaning that they would have had to exit that space module without these things on their backs, which would have meant death for them. And the fact that there were lighting fixtures falling from ceilings in some of the filming, the facts that, there are so many anomalies out there. I mean, I'm not an expert in any of it, but that wasn't the reason why we brought that up, nor was this moon, they call it mockumentary. The reason I brought that up, and I brought up the Joyce Riley chemtrails interview, was because what they were doing and what they have been doing is actually admitting some of these things and then trying to use parts of those admissions as a way of adding more lies to the full story. And it's something that we have to look out for. And I was using that as an example. Now, Muhammad told me afterwards he saw a version of that mockumentary where he actually thought much of it was factual, and he'll be the first to admit that he should have done more research on that. But I wasn't trying to point to that at all on my in my presentation, but rather much of what they were admitting to is true, and they were trying to mock people and poo-poo it. And in fact, someone even told me that at the end of that broadcast, they even say no Goy was injured in the making of this, which is, just a slap in the face of the rest of us. It's almost a thumbing of the nose at us. Truthfully, ladies and gentlemen, they do let a lot of facts out in their presentations to try to forward or remain in situations where they stay in the control seat. I have to say that Alex Jones does that regularly. He puts out about 90% facts on highway corridors being built and about a lot of the things that are going on, but then, of course, veers you off right when it's time to start naming names. You know, I don't ever hear him talking about the membership of PNAC being entirely Zionist Jewish. I don't hear him talking about 9/11's whole conspiracy being entirely Zionist Jewish. I don't hear him talking about Hollywood being entirely Zionist Jewish. In fact, he mentioned on air that Hollywood was owned and operated by Arabs, which is astonishing when you actually think about how disingenuous that kind of a declaration is. But and so I go after him because he's got a large audience that still believes he's a truth teller, and well, he's not. He is somebody that I believe is working for the bad guys. Otherwise, he wouldn't be saying such crazy things such as that. The other side of it is we're making such inroads here, and we're battling these people in so many areas. I am aware that Cynthia McKinney was taken off the coast of Israel. Well, it's not Israel, it's Palestine. Let's say what it should be called. Off the coast of Palestine in international waters, was taken hostage by the Israelis, which, in my view, is an act of war, and that the American government should declare immediately the return of those Americans on board that ship and the rest of the people included forthwith, or war should break out against Israel. That's what I believe. We're talking about piracy off the coast of Somalia, and we're talking about having to send troops and doing all this other stuff. Well, an act of piracy was committed by the Israeli military, not dissimilar from the crimes they've committed in the past, and there is virtually no uproar. Well, we should be declaring war against that that vile sickness called Israel, and I think people should just be absolutely flipping their lid and making calls all across America today and placing this everywhere. We've got to start showing our power, and the power of our knowledge has to start opening up here. You know, these people are not as bright as they declare themselves to be, and that's becoming more and more evident as we watch the mistakes they make. You know, their recent attack at Christmas time for 1,300 people they murdered, genocided in the Gaza Strip, cost them a massive amount of public support worldwide, and we have been building upon that error, that sickness, that awful genocide that they committed, and we are still finding new adherence to these facts because of it. And I believe this most recent foolishness they're committing off their coast shows that they don't get it, that they will never get it, and that we have to take advantage of how stupid they're being again and inform larger swaths of the world. So, again, ladies and gentlemen, this recording with Representative Finley was abruptly ended at his request, and I'm not surprised after seeing how little he actually knows about the current research that he didn't want to get into that kind of questioning and seem as though he's off base with his efforts. You know, if from a historical standpoint, maybe his book will be interesting, but certainly not from a current events standpoint if he's still pounding the pots and pans of Osama bin Laden having done 9/11. I mean, that is so thoroughly discredited that that it's even laughable, and I don't think Representative Finley even is aware of that. Well, you know, things happen. I was happy to have him on. It's another interview that I've gone through. I mentioned that I had interviewed Ralph Nader, and he ran off my show when the questioning got tough. And in fact, he was carrying with him the same set of nonsense that Mr. Finley is at this point, which shows you how little effort has been made by us to get this information out to the mainstream, or Mr. Nader has never been interested in the facts. Who knows? Who knows what the truth is about him? I can tell you one thing. He was not willing to talk about any of the truth about 9/11 or any of the other things that I brought him on the show for, and he ran off with, he ran off with his tail between his legs, as many people do when they're faced with the facts. So I hope this broadcast brought some light to bear on these facts, or at least another voice, and some clarification on the efforts we made the other day. Again, I'm going to repeat that. I'm trying to show patterns here on how these people do research, and they have been bringing facts out to keep current on their control over the flow of information. But in fact, they're using actual truth. They are actually putting out factual things that we can prove with evidence about so many things, and they're making it as a mockery in order to make people think anybody who thinks that way is an imbecile or a fool. Well, it hasn't worked. It won't work. They've used this same tactic often. And, of course, if you listen to that crazy chemtrails thing done by this guy, A.C. Griffith, you'll note right away that this guy is just an operative, probably Mossad, working with the power hour crooks over there, trying to pass off lies as truth. So, I hope this adds a little bit to your day. I will keep you updated on the Cynthia McKinney issues. And until the next time, ladies and gentlemen, this is Daryl Bradford Smith telling you all, please, be well. Bye-bye now.